I'm joining the podcast, Troy Stone, who is the former drummer for White Cross and is part of other projects that we'll talk about. Troy, thanks for joining the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, I didn't really know much about you, to be honest with you, and that's why I'm excited about this interview to get to know you. And I believe it was KC Smothers from his interview. He was talking about you and said, hey, you got to talk to him. And that, really, honestly, I had no idea that White Cross, really during the time period that you played drums with him, which we'll discuss, that anybody else but Michael Feehan was playing drums with him. So I had no clue about that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's a little lost time there for some reason, some good stuff, but it was right there towards the end. So I get it.
Right. Yeah, and I definitely we'll discuss that because that's a big part of your history and your story. But for me and others that don't really know you, what area did you grow up? Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Illinois, central Illinois, right on the Illinois-Indiana border in a little town called Paris, Illinois.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, we've had we had a country artist come out here, Brett Eldridge. He came out of Paris, out of the same high school. But anyways, then I moved. Well, I was living in Paris, Illinois when I got the call and stuff. But yeah, I grew up over here.
So you lived there for quite a while then, in the early part of your life.
Yeah, when I graduated, it was 2 months later, and I moved to Orange, California, right down the road from Mickey and Goofy and the guys in Anaheim. So,
okay, what did you move out there for? Was it for the music?
Absolutely. Part of
just that's where everyone was at.
That's where the scene was at the time. Yeah.
What year was that?
That was 89, yeah.
Well, let me go back just a little bit more. When did you really get into music, and what was kind of the introduction of bands that you're really into, and when did you become a musician? You also sing too, besides play drums, but yeah. You know, are there other aspects of being a musician for you too?
Yeah, I was. I've always told everyone it was a gift. It was a total gift. I'm all self-taught of everything that I do, and when I was a little bitty boy, my mother used to have music going around the house all the time. And the story goes, she's washing dishes. I would, you know, stand up holding the back of her legs and smacking her rear end with my hands to the music. And she said, that hurts. And so she shoved me in the corner, gave me some silverware and pots and pans. And I destroyed all of those with, you know, bent the spoons backwards and whatnot. And so they decided to get me my first little Mickey Mouse drum set when I was about 3 or 4 years old. And I destroyed that, put my, you know, little paper heads and the sheet metal cymbals.
So yeah, those don't last long.
No. So they, after destroying all those little things you get in wherever you got them at, JCPenney's or wherever, but they got me in my real drum set when I was about 5 years old. So I was bit very early. I could play. My mom used to have me play to her music, which was like Barbara Ann, Wipeout, and stuff like that. And
Wipeout's an essential, I think, for beginning drummers to play that little, just that little thing that, you know, that wherever you would call that pattern, I guess. But
yeah,
drum roll.
Everybody, yeah, that whatever that is. But I was really shy. She would bring friends or even aunts and uncles over to hear me play, but I wouldn't play in front of them. They have to go around the corner. So I would
really
play, and they'd be in another room. Yeah. And so mom would say, well, what are you going to do? How are you going to be, you know, how are you going to play drums? Are you going to put a shower curtain around your set or something, you know?
So, yeah. That would be a first.
I got out of that around junior high school. I was in a talent show with some boys, friends of mine, and everybody was lip syncing, playing air guitar, and I was actually playing drums. So I was way louder than everybody. But
was there a particular song that you were playing or that you guys played?
Yes, we played Van Halen "Jump."
Oh wow!
I was probably, I don't know, seventh grade, something like that. We didn't know any. We had the theatrics. It was so funny. We had two of our friends standing behind the drums, behind curtains. And they would like squeeze this baby powder for smoke, and then they'd throw it across to the other guy.
Oh, wow.
It was so stupid.
What were the bands were you listening to? That was there like a favorite band that you had or drummer? Or drummers?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, like I said, when I was little and mom got me the set, I was playing her 50s and 60s and stuff because that's what was, you know, the Beatles and stuff like that and Elvis. But when I got to liking and acquiring taste for music, of course, in junior high, I gravitated to the hair bands is what they call them. I don't know if I like that term, but.
Yeah, well, people know what it is. They exactly. I know it's not the greatest term, but. Yeah.
Right. I mean, because it's not about the hair, even though we all had, whatever. But
yeah.
I listened to, I listened to Quiet Riot. I listened to Queensryche. I love Scott Rockenfield stuff. Oh my gosh. This is all junior high stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I played all that stuff. I would go home from school. I could not wait to get home from school. And essentially I was practicing or rehearsing, but to me I wasn't. In my mind I was playing to Market Square Arena or, you know, Madison Square Gardens, or so I was playing the, you know, Kiss Live 2, and I mean the first live record, and
right,
I was in my room imagining playing to all these people in stadiums and stuff. But I did it every single day, and it just built up, you know, a good practice, a good rehearsal woodshed. But I just love doing it. So,
were you raised in a Christian atmosphere, or yes. Was that something came later?
Yes, it wasn't a very strict. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, suit and tie and slick the hair back with grease kind of type thing. It was
right.
But yes, God and Christianity was very well in my mother and us. And she grew up Seventh-day Adventist, which, you know, they went to church on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
But the word was there, the Bible was there, and, you know, until I got older did I really get a relationship with the Lord, but I did, I was planted that seed and what was, you know, instructed biblically and what was expected of me, so.
Did you listen to Christian music at any point, or were there any bands that you were into?
I did not until Stryper.
Right. Stryper made it cool.
Yeah, Stryper made it cool. So, and not that the others weren't, because, you know, now that I'm older, but at the time as a young boy, yeah, I mean, I was all about, you know, Soldiers Under Command and, you know, To Hell with the Devil and. Which was cool. I listened to your podcast with Robert, which was awesome. So
yeah, I wish I had much more time. You know, I was thankful he gave me time to do it. I was like, Oh man, I could pick. I've talked to him before in person, and have had great conversations with him. But man, that was an honor. Trust me, I would. He said he would come back on. He's told me in messages, so hopefully they'll happen. Because, I mean, that guy, when he speaks to me, it's full of the Holy Spirit, just wisdom. He's just, yeah, he's a cool guy. People are like, okay, shut up, Joel. We know you love Robert Sweet.
No, hey, you're a drummer too, right?
Right, I am. That's what I tell myself.
That helps too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's, especially when, you know, you can only really listen to Christian music. Like for me,
right?
You know, that's the guy. Even among secular artists, I mean, as drummers, to me,
right?
You know, he's up there. Yeah, oh, yeah. You know, it's funny on the Facebook group, people were giving me a hard time or arguing and debating because I simply put "Happy birthday to the goat of drumming, Robert Sweet," and some people don't even know what "goat" means, which is greatest of all time, and then others were. My simple happy birthday. They're like, goat. I don't know about him being the goat. I'm like, you know what? He is to me. So
exactly. It's all. I mean,
look at the guy for what he is now. He's 63.
Yeah.
Playing as well as he does and as aggressive. I mean, that's impressive.
You know, he influenced a lot of people as well through his gifts. And, you know, you being one, me being another. And there's
lots of them. Who else was inspiring you as a drummer when you were younger?
Well, I would not have to leave out Peter Criss, of course, because I listened, you know, to all those records growing up. And so, you know, he wasn't like Robert Sweet or Scott Rockenfeller, Queensryche or Neil Peart. You know, but he set a foundation and a love for rock and roll music, drumming. So, yeah, Peter Criss. I've mentioned Scott many times with Queensryche.
What do you think about Scott in his current situation? And kind of weird.
Yeah,
don't know what's going on. It's kind of odd situation with.
It is, and sometimes I wish, even though, you know, curiosity is humans, we want to know what's going on. I just wish people would even the bands would leave the personal life to the side and the drama going on, and just, you know, give the fans what the music, and then kind of keep that to a separate thing. Because yeah, I mean, with the Motley Crue thing going on now,
yeah, it's big
and
news.
Journey thing going on, and just
yeah, and Kiss, the Kiss, Ace Frehley.
Yeah, I mean, you know, drama. It makes a fan. It's like, you know, you feel like you know these people like they're your best friends, and it hurts sometimes. So
yeah, you don't want to see these guys tearing each other apart when they were such an important part of your life, and at one point they were together. It doesn't mean they're best friends, but
right.
I mean, that's kind of similar with Stryper when Tim Gaines was out the second time, and there's some stuff being thrown around. You're like, man, I don't want you guys to be acting like this.
Yeah, they just need to keep it undercover if they can. But everybody wants to know.
We're nosy. What was your first concert, real concert that you got to go see?
Goodness. I'm sure a real concert would have been like a country thing from my parents or something I went to, like the Bellamy Brothers or something like that. But my first rock big concert would have been probably junior high-ish. It probably would have been Kiss and Queensryche. Yeah, probably on the Animalized tour.
You know, are you a real big Kiss fan?
Yeah.
Did you, I know this is off subject here, but about Kiss, during that time period, you know, a lot of people don't know about, is it Mark St. John? Is that his name? Mark St. John, the guitarist. And they just released, and then they released the Off the Soundboard album they just put out, where this guy Mark St. John played like either it was 1.5 shows or 2.5. Yeah. And people go, how did he play half a show? Is because Bruce Kulick had to come in and finish the show.
Yeah,
that's such a crazy, odd situation.
Yeah,
I don't know how rare you are. You know, it was a rare thing, but how familiar you are with that situation. Because yeah, that's probably around the time that you might have seen him, though, I guess. But
well, I saw him with Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce played all those shows. It's just an odd thing, though. Then the guy couldn't play because his fingers were messed up, and then unfortunately, he's passed away. But yeah, I was listening to that Kiss album, and it's not that great. Or the live album, it's not that great. Paul Stanley's rap in between songs is kind of stupid, to be honest with you.
YouTube has a thing that's like got all of his rants, like all.
Oh, really?
All mashed together. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, he was totally different during that time period too. A lot of cussing.
Yeah. Exactly.
When's like your first band? Do you start getting serious about music and performing?
I was in high school. I was a sophomore in high school. And I was in a band with older guys. They were all seniors. And we played covers, but we were the only band in the area that had a full CD made and of all originals.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a sophomore, and we had an entire album worth of stuff. So.
Were you considered, I guess, a secular band? What were you doing? Anything Christian? It was more secular driven. Okay.
That was all. Yeah, that was all just a secular band there.
What kind of style would you say you guys were? Was it that hair metal?
Yeah, classic rock. It wasn't as hard. It was more like a 38 special type sound, or Sammy Hagar, something like that.
When you move, what age did you say you moved to California?
I was only 19. Yeah, I graduated high school and went straight out about 2 months
What
later.
year was that?
89.
Okay, so it's kind of getting closer to the, unfortunately, the end of that kind of genre of metal, but it's still strong at that point. So do you move out there by yourself, or do you move out there with your band?
I moved out there with a buddy that was in a band with me. A
Okay.
guitar player, and then a friend. So it was three of us that moved out there.
What did your parents think about that? Were they okay with it, or?
They knew I was going. My guidance counselor asked me, "What are you going to do when you graduate?" Like they do. I said, "I'm going to play music for a living," And he said to me, "Well, that's a very hard, thing to break into. Do you have a backup plan?" And I was sincere. I was not a smart aleck boy by no means. I was very respectful, and I said, "No, sir," because if I had a plan B, I knew I would fall back on it. So I was going for it. I was no matter what. If I fell, I fell, and I knew that I had a good, strong family that I come back home to. So.
Yeah, I didn't move to California, but that's exactly my mind frame when I was getting out of high school. I just wanted to get out of high school.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, I'm going to be a musician. I thought in my mind, I'm thinking I'm going to be in a popular band. We're going to be famous. I'm going to get signed. And I didn't have any other plans. I wasn't going to go to college, so
Right.
I know exactly how you felt. Although I was in the Atlanta area, so it was a little more. It
Right.
wasn't Paris, Illinois, where no one
Right.
knows there's where you're at or what's going on. But
Exactly.
that's a big jump to go to California. So how was it when you get out there?
I get out there, and of course, you got to pay bills. I had only so much money saved, and that's going to run
Yeah,
out.
got to get a job.
Yep. So I got a job as a stock boy at a Target right down the road. I could walk to it. And here's where things all change around for me. I had a band that came to my school. I don't know if you ever had one come to your school, but they were out of Tampa Bay, Florida, called Showcase.
Okay.
They came in, they did a 45-minute assembly program of popular rock music in the top 40, and then they gave like a message, and then they
Yeah.
came back and did a night concert an hour and a half later, or an hour and a half, whatever night it was going to be. I signed my name to a recipe card, more or less. For that company, when they came to my high school when I was like a junior or senior, I was working at Target for 4 or 5 months, 6 months. I was out in California trying to break in to bands and stuff. And I get home, and on the answer machine, which we had answer machines back then, not cell phones.
Yeah, remember
So
those?
the little lights blinking. I'm like, oh, I got a message, and it's from that company, and they were called Showcase. Asking if I that they picked my name out of the thing, whatever, and asked all about me. And I told them I was a drummer. They said, "Well, we need a singer, we need a front man." I said, "Well, I can sing." And so I said, "But I'm really a drummer. That's what I do. I'm a drummer." And they said, "Well, can you sing something for us?" I said, "Over the phone?" They're like, "Yeah, just put the phone down on the counter and sing something." I think I sang some Bon Jovi or something. And they said, "Okay." And they asked me a couple more questions. They said, "Well, would you be interested in joining up with one of our bands on the road already?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well, we can get you out here as soon as you can." And I said, "Well, I got to give notice and stuff." So I gave 2 weeks notice and my roommates and stuff, and I just kind of bailed. And
Was that
they
to go out to Florida?
no, this well, this was I'm meeting up with a band that's already touring out of that
Okay.
company.
Okay, so you're just kind of going wherever they were at
Wherever they're
to
at,
play.
yeah. plug into the show, just kind of like the Bruce thing with the Mark thing and the Kiss. You know, I'm going to fill in a singer that's leaving this band.
I got you now. Okay.
So they give me plane tickets. I flew out of John Wayne International or John Wayne Airport there in California, and I flew into Toledo, Ohio, and met up with the band. Never knew him from Adam.
Yeah.
And so I travel with these guys, and they're doing 2 or 3 shows. This is a major thing. I mean, I end up doing this for 5 years.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I just started doing this for 5 years from the age of 19 up. These guys do, in this company, around 3 shows every single day, except for Sunday. So they're doing 15 shows a week. They're doing 10 months out of the year, doing 500 shows every year.
That's a lot.
250,000 students every year.
Are you singing the whole time?
I'm singing with this group. I'm a
Does that not kill your vocals? With yes. That much singing?
Yes. But it also strengthened and taught me so much with that. Yes, okay. You lost your voice and the show must go on. So I went out and sucked many times until I got my muscles in it, because that's all it is, you know, your diaphragm and your larynx and all that stuff. And it finally built up and I could do it. But yeah, at first it was like, whoa. And we're doing stuff off top 40, like what's on MTV. I mean, we're doing, you know, Nelson, and we're doing Bad English and whatever, you know, Escape Club, whatever. And we do this little mashup thing, put together this big medley of songs and a couple of full songs. We do like this little skit, this comedy skit. And then we talk to the students about issues like, you know, bullying or drugs and staying in school and having a dream and setting goals. And so we would do that. And then we'd do that 45 minutes in school. We'd say, you know what, we're going to sell tickets. You can get them from your student council members. We'll be back here Wednesday night or Tuesday night, whatever night we're there. And for an hour and a half of concert, just full, no medleys, full songs, rock and roll. And then when we did that, we were allowed to give a testimony in the night show because it was off of school time.
Okay.
It was a Christian-based company. And so we went in, they came back at night. We gave a full testimony of us being Christians and what we, you know, that we get to travel around doing what we love to do, but yet we put our faith in God and we put our trust and hope in God. And if anyone would like to know more about that, you know, come up and we'll get you to the right people in your town. You know, we have people in each town that would talk to them. And so we witnessed quite a bit in that company. And that's what the whole company was based for, not just playing music. It was a ministry.
Who was there like a head person for this company or creator or?
Yes. His name was Lowell Lytle. And he was out of St. Pete, Florida. He came up with it, I think, in the 70s. And it was called Young American Showcase back then. They had bands like Free Fair, Freedom Jam, The Edge. And I joined up in the Free Fair stage and then became XL and did that.
So. Okay. Not to get mixed up with the XL, the singer, Todd Stevens, the rapper, nothing with that. Okay. Was there any musicians that people would know of today that you played with during that time period in that act?
I was in a band with actually 2 other members. We all went to the CCM market. I was in a band with my drummer at one time when I was singing was Brian Duvall. And he drummed with a band. Oh, my goodness. What was the name of that band?
That name sounds familiar.
Sorry, Brian. The guy in the band that he was in, his sister was Miss Angie, if you remember a group called Miss Angie.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Q Public.
Johnny Q Public. That was it.
Okay. Yeah, I had her on the show.
Johnny Q Public. Last year. Brian's band. Yeah, he was in that band, drumming for them. And then the other guy in a band that I drummed with, because I did 2 years of fronting, and then I finally got behind the set for 2 years drumming, and then the fifth year they hired me to be an entertainment concept teacher, and I flew from band to band and taught entertainment concepts to all the bands out there.
Wow.
But I was in, when I was drumming, I was in a band with Brad Avery, which is Third Day.
Yeah.
We were in a band for a long time, about a year and a half or so together. But,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
What?
White Cross. So.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, what is that kind of what happens next after that comes to an end, or was there something else going on when, before you get into White Cross?
I did that for about 5 years. And then I came back to my hometown. The company switched hands and went to, from Young American Showcase to Worldwide Showcase is what they called it. And it lasted a few years after it switched hands. And I came home and met a girl and got married at the time there. And was just around here playing locally in the Indiana, Illinois area. Mm-hmm. And of course, through all this stuff, I had known Tracy Ferry, which was he was in a band called Electric. They wore roller skates and stuff, and they kind of dabbled in that same company that I just.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they did too many shows. They might have. I mean, I can't really remember, but.
Was this after he was in Soraya, right?
Correct. That was before he was in
Soraya. Okay.
Which all those guys will tie together. I mean, all those guys come into my life. So I was at home and I was, you know, I'm always looking for that project. I'm always looking for that band, and I'm meantime paying bills by playing locally and playing cover tunes and stuff. And Tracy calls me up, and I had moved to Nashville. I should say that I moved to Nashville. Okay. Lived in Nashville for 2 or 3 years, and then moved back home to Illinois. But as I know, it's a bunch of mumble I'm saying right now.
That's okay.
It will tie in. Tracy and I rehearsed. We rehearsed the Michael Sweet solo records. Because Michael had already done the first tour.
Yeah.
First solo. And he was going to do the second record and the second tour. And Tracy's like, you know, Tracy and I were, we had been buddy in Nashville, you know, went and seen movies and stuff and hung out. And he said, well, we went to a church in Franklin, his church, and went to the basement. We rehearsed a bunch of the Michael Sweet stuff, and that was my hopes. That was my break. I was gonna.
So you guys were doing that in hopes of trying to hook up with Michael to play that tour.
And Tracy was going to do the tour. I don't know if Tracy went out with Michael Sweet. I don't know if he played with Michael. I know he played with Striper later on.
Yeah, he did do the Striper thing, but I don't remember.
I don't know that he did. I think maybe he was going to do that second tour, and so. Yeah. We got together and was going to record some stuff of the Michael stuff he was going to send to Michael. And, then Michael decided that he wasn't going to go out. That was when he became like a park ranger or something. Mm-hmm. He moved.
Yeah. Cranberry Farm. And
yeah. So he didn't do that tour. So that fell through. And then, Tracy had played with White Cross. He was on the, Unveiled album and the Equilibrium album. Those tours, and I might be skipping some timelines, I'm sorry, but
it's okay.
He called me and said, hey, you know, sorry about the Michael Sweet thing or whatever, but Michael Fien is considering on moving on from White Cross, and I think he was going to go with maybe a band called Curious Fools. I could be wrong. Sorry, Michael, if you're listening.
Yeah, but, I remember that band.
So he says, you know, if you want to audition, you know, you can have an audition or whatever. And so Michael Fiend spoke with Scott and stuff and said, you know, they had something set up, and I was one of, I don't know how many drummers or whatever that were going to audition. But of course, Michael had given me, we had four songs to learn for this audition, and Michael had given me the entire set list that they were doing.
Okay. And Rex wasn't in the band at this time, right?
No, it was Barry Grawl.
Right.
Which went on to be with, you know, what's that?
Audio. Was it Audio? No, not Audio Adrenaline, was it? No.
Only Imagine, that band.
Yeah, I know who it, I don't know why I'm going blank, but anyways, it's not important. Gives you the set list.
Yeah, he gave me the entire set list of what they're doing. So when it was my turn to audition, of course, I'm fast-forwarding through all this stuff. When I went to audition, they had auditioned, I don't know how many drummers before me, and they're in Nashville. And so they're like, so what song do you want to do? And I whipped out that list, and I said, any one of these are good. And Barry's like, you know all these? I'm like, yeah. I learned the BGVs too.
And like, oh, wow.
And so he's like, cool. So they were tired of playing the same four songs all day. They're like, well, let's do this one, like Because of Jesus or something, you know. And so we went into it and we played a couple of things, you know, we played three or four tunes and just jammed, that didn't do any of those four songs that they wanted people to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to go on and do their thing. And, you know, Barry's like, hey, as far as I'm concerned, you know what I think, but we got to audition these other guys. So that's how that became of that. And Scott called me one night and met with me at a Wendy's. And we sat down and he asked me, you know, personal questions about my faith and what I believed in. Of course, that is more important than the music and how good you might be. It went really well. And they decided to have me as the member from, because they were getting ready to do the new album. And so it was me, a guy playing bass by the name of Brent Denny, and Barry Grawl was in the band, and Scott Wenzel. And of course, I came in at the end of the Equilibrium tour. So we were out on a tour called Raw, which was the Resurrection band and White Cross Raw.
Oh, wow.
And we jumped on the road and did a bunch of shows with Resurrection band and did some festivals and did some solo shows with Rez. And then the album was coming and Barry left the band, was going to leave the band. And so
was that a show? How was that to you? I mean, you're still pretty new, I guess, really, but.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying, we're doing all these shows and everything's great, but, Barry says he's going to leave. He's going to, I don't know where he was going to go after that band. And I hate that I can't remember.
I'm trying to Google it. I'm Googling it right now. I'm trying to.
I can only imagine. That's the song, man. That's the big song from them.
I cannot think. I'm trying to look it up.
That's fine. So he's going to leave. And Tracy recommends that I give Quentin's Q's name to Scott to audition.
Quentin Gibson.
Right. So he was in with Soraya. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Soraya
with Tracy.
And Brad was drumming. And anyways, so that's how that came about. So Quentin's name got through in. He came in and played some stuff. I don't think it was a major audition type thing. He just came in and said, showed that he could do it. And so Barry left and Quentin was in place.
And Barry was in Mercy Me.
There you go. Mercy Me. Thank you. I'm so sorry, Barry. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
If Barry's listening, Barry, you can come on the show.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. But Barry, I mean, it was awesome. I'm telling you, it was awesome. He's a great guy. Great guy. And
Well, let me ask you something, because I know I've kind of had chats with Quentin. I've been trying to get him on the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, he mentioned that when he came in the band, he got flack from fans because he's not Rex.
Right.
Did you ever see that with Barry getting any kind of maybe mistreatment from fans because they're upset that Rex isn't in the band and this guy is replacing?
Obviously, you know. White Cross, to the White Cross fans, were Scott and Rex. I mean, that's no-brainer.
And that's a whole nother thing kind of that's been going on, not really in the public eye, but talking about Motley Crue and the drama and stuff. Unfortunately, there's the drama with Scott and Rex, and that still carries on today, unfortunately. Yeah. But not to lead off the question there, but
don't worry.
The treatment. What did you witness, or was there anything significant that ever happened?
Well, you know, I mean, as far as Barry leaving, I think it was just other opportunities. I'm not 100% sure because I can't speak for those guys, and I won't try to speak for those guys. But my opinion is that both Michael and Barry, I think, my personal opinion, they were knowing that the band was at the end of the hype as far as Rex and Scott and the music they made.
It was kind of dying down, especially the music genre. And with Equilibrium album was a big change.
Yes.
In style. Yeah. Sorry. That was a difficult time for bands like White Cross and anybody with that association of, like you said, hair metal, or what do you want to call it, the 80s metal, of trying to do anything during that time. And you're kind of like, you're kind of screwed if you try something different. Right. You're screwed if you stay the same, because
Well, I mean, I went on to do some pretty big festivals with White Cross. And when we first started doing those with people like Guardian, I mean, we were, you know, the Guardian guys still had the long hair and was rocking out, but they switched because the whole industry was switching. You know, they cut their hair and became, wore the little black shoes with the with the short hair, you know, the grunge look.
And it was hard to follow a lot of those bands that when they did that, for me, at least personally, because you love a band for what their original sound is, you fall in love with them for, and when they make a big change.
Yeah.
You're like, that's not the style and music I enjoy. And I enjoyed it for a certain reason. So it's hard to follow a lot of those bands.
I get it. Now, as a band, like me being in the group there, we did both. So that was kind of cool. I got to do, you know, all of the genres that they did. And I personally, you know, I'm a Headbangers Ball type music guy. And I love that old White Cross stuff. But if there's some really good stuff as well on the Equilibrium album. And
yeah, and I bought that when it came out on cassette tape, that is, but I bought it and it was different, but I actually enjoyed it when it came out.
That's the thing, it's just different. And the Flytrap, I mean, when we first hit that thing with Get Real, the very first the first track on the album, it's like, what in the world? Because I mean, it's right in your face, and it's pretty rough. It's pretty hard.
Well, I was going to ask you, so Barry's leaving.
Yeah.
The band is about to get ready to do another album.
Mm-hmm.
Who's writing the music? How does that work? Because Barry's leaving. Are you guys using songs he wrote, or
no?
Is Scott the main songwriter at this point, or is someone else writing songs?
Everybody, it was kind of a cool thing. It was something they had never done, as far as what I was told. And we were all told that we could submit songs if we wanted to, and then we would pick, you know, band wise or Scott would, you know, what stuck, you know, we throw it against the wall and what stuck. But I never had anything on there, but Quentin wrote a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, Scott writes all of the lyrics. He writes all the lyrics.
Does he come up with all the melodies too with the lyrics?
As far as I know, for the most part, I believe so. Yes. Now there's some producer stuff that happens, you know, David Severo produced the album.
Oh, okay. How was that? Did you record on this album or did they have a studio musician record drums? No,
I recorded everything on it. Yeah.
Because I know that's something Michael discussed. I didn't know. I learned.
Yes. Was,
I thought he recorded on those albums during his time. And he told me on the podcast that no, they had a studio musician come in for even the bass and drums, which I had no clue.
Well, Michael and I have talked about that, and that was something that he couldn't believe either, that they left in the album.
Well, I'm sure that's a letdown, man. You're working your butt off. You're the drummer. You know you can do that stuff, but then you get in the studio, and you know I'm sure that doesn't help you want to stay in a band. If you're like, well, you're not confident in me enough to do that.
Yeah, it's a time and a money thing. You know, time is money. And
yeah, and I understand. Some guys are better.
Well, these guys can chart. They're like, they just chart things out, and they'll play it, you know, by just reading it because they charted it out. So, I mean, there's a system there in Nashville. They do that. But no, I was blessed enough to be able to play. There was one song that was programmed by Doug Biden, who engineered the album.
And how was it working with Safiro?
Oh, it was great. I mean, we did the drums at Black Dog Studio, and then he did a lot of the vocals and back vocals and stuff, I think, at his home studio. You know, he was pretty persistent on making sure that he didn't go down with this record, you know, as a producer. I guess by saying that, meaning he's not going to put up just something that just lays there.
Yeah. I mean, he wants to do the best he can.
Exactly.
Sounds like it.
He should, as you know,
not just wing it.
Got great ears on him and good producer, and you know, him with all the Blood Good stuff work. So,
yeah. I mean, well, I think if it weren't for him, I think Holy Soldier wouldn't have been as great as they were, in my opinion.
I loved Holy Soldier.
Right.
Now, see, you asked me that a long time ago. That's me. I'm like, I got those brains like squirrel. If I see a bird, I might look. But
yeah, I'm okay. I'm the same way.
There was a time early on, like senior year, and then when I got to that company I told you about doing the school shows and stuff, mm-hmm. I got into Holy Soldier. I got into Baron Cross. I got into a group called Novella. Striper, you know, Guardian, all those guys. So I was listening to all that stuff, but it wasn't just strictly that, but.
Novella had their singer, the singer. I had him on, going blank on his name all of a sudden, but all those bands I've been blessed to pretty much have those guys on the show.
I've listened to a lot of your podcast. I listened to a bunch of them. But...
Well, thank you.
It's good stuff.
So how is it? Is there any tension when you guys are recording this album, or how are things proceeding from your perspective as a band?
Okay, so Quentin is in there doing all the guitar work. Him and David threw some stuff in, of course. You know, he's going to play some guitar on there. Brent Denny did all the bass. I did all the drums, with exception of the programmed song that Doug Biden programmed, and that's because we were running short on days in the studio. We were touring and recording the album simultaneously, so we'd come off the road, we go in the studio, and we ran out of days. And so it was funny, he had me hit each drum, a hard hit, a medium, a soft hit, and then he programmed everything in on one of the songs, which I believe is I believe it's Say a Prayer, but anyways, I could be wrong on that. But and then Scott, you know, Scott came in at the end and did all the vocals. But the tension, if there was any tension, it was just the touring and then being tired and coming in and doing a take and you thinking it's good, but David wanting to be perfection, which is great. I love that. But you know, when you've done it a couple times and he's like, okay, well, let's do it again, and you're like, ugh.
Right.
I think I remember actually saying, "This isn't fun," or something like that. You know, here I am. He's like, "Fun? It's not supposed to be fun." I'm like, "You're
yes,
right.
It is.
You're right."
I want it to be fun.
You know, but it was like long hours in the studio, and you're tired. And but
were you still married at this time?
Yes, I was still married at that time, and so you know, I had a wife at home and two boys that were in, you know, little. And I just, you know, off. I'm always on the road. Always, you know, when we went out, we'd go out, and we did those big tours, like in South America. You know, we'd go out for two or three weeks at a time, but anyways, so the tension was that's the only tension, was just tired. You're tired. You're hungry. You've done it so many times, and you thought it was good, but it wasn't quite good enough for what David wanted to hear. And so we did it until it was right. So, and that's great. It came out great, I think. So,
you know, and this may sound bad, but I don't honestly know if I've ever heard that White Cross album.
Yes.
It is not easy to find. I don't even think it's on streaming services either.
Yeah, you can go on YouTube and pull it up, and they have every track on there.
I'm going to have to check it out.
And you can go on to my YouTube, which I do a thing called Slammin' Sunday, and I do the whole entire album from my room.
Were you playing drums along to it? Or
I'm playing along with it, yeah.
What's your YouTube channel where people can check that out?
You can go to Troy's Madness, M-A-D-N-E-S-S, Troy's Madness on YouTube. And I've got years worth of what I call Slammin' Sunday. I used to go on at 7 o'clock p.m. Central every Sunday and slam out like some favorite songs of mine. And we put them on YouTube, and years before the pandemic hit. And
yeah,
then the pandemic hit, everybody would start doing it. So.
Yeah, I know. So what happens once the album comes out? Do you guys go do another tour, or
yes.
Is there something else going on?
This was in the 96 is when the album was being made. Maybe it came out then too. It was 96. It was on REX Records.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Which was a division of Platinum Entertainment, as well as like a sister shoot of that. But we had people on the REX label. Sixpence None the Richer was there before they got really big. Mm-hmm. Somewhere else. And a Rocket Boy, Code of Ethics, The Waiting, Living Sacrifice, Circle Dust, 6 Feet Deep, all those guys were on there.
I forgot about Rocket Boy.
Yeah. I
haven't heard that name in a while.
So we do the album, and then it's time for all the promotion. We have to go, we have to get in front of people and push the album. So we started doing quite a bit of touring, and same guys, Quentin, Brent, Scott, myself. And we hit the road. We did a bunch of United States dates, and we did a lot of overseas stuff all through Europe, all through South America.
When you guys were touring at that point in time, were you just kind of traveling in a van, or was there some?
You fly over to, you know, whatever country you're doing, and the promoter will drive you around like in a big airport shuttle type van.
Right.
And of course, drumming is on the right, or you just put what you want. I had, you know, the double kick set with all the rack toms and stuff, and told them what I wanted. I was using Yamahas at the time, but I got a lot of Pearls overseas. So,
yeah, that's not always fun playing someone else's set or a set that is not yours.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any kind of maybe stories of incidents with drums maybe not being what you needed, or something,
you know,
falling apart or whatever it might be?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, not too bad. I mean, there was one tour that we did in Denmark, and I think the promoter, when he was a younger guy, him and a friend of his, I think they went in together and went and bought everything. They went and bought,
oh my gosh,
like a 5-piece drum kit and like some backline gear, you know, an amp and bass amp. And so they traveled, they put this in a van or a trailer. I can't remember what it was, but we did 5 or 6 shows all around Denmark and Switzerland and all this stuff. And so, yeah, I was playing on that 5-piece kit, which When I did the when we did the other ones, like in South America, those guys all went out. They got the double kick for me and the six rack toms and two floors and all the cymbals.
So you at that time you're playing what if you prefer if you could get it was the bigger kind of drum set. You yeah. weren't playing something small.
Yeah, I wanted the double kick for sure, but if not, I had a double kick pedal anyways, and I just liked the feel. I loved having that big set with that type of music. I'm a pretty aggressive. If you watch any of the videos, if you go on and watch any of the videos, I'm very animated. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm. I probably said it on the episodes. I just as a drummer, I hate watching drummers that have no emotion. Yeah. And that just sit there, and I'm like, you could put a mannequin back there, and it's the same difference. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a hard hitter. That everything goes back to Robert Sweet, man. I am. And it's funny because I'll play churches. I haven't played much lately, but it's always the same thing. Can you play not as loud? Can you not be so loud playing drums? I'm like, I don't know. It's hard not to.
He set the bar for us. That's it.
Yeah, but. Was there, you know, because there is some more member lineup changes too, because Casey, having him on the show, I know he came in playing bass originally, and then plays guitar when I guess Quentin leaves. So,
to do other stuff. Like I said, everyone who left the band went, I believe, in my opinion, to what they thought were a better situation for the time or for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Quentin has played with everybody from Plum to, you know, John Elefante, and he was doing John Elefante stuff, and that's where Casey comes in. And Casey, of course, was with Nuvo at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And he got the call from, I believe Quentin recommended
Casey. I think that's what he said. I think that's what he said on his episode. I believe
so. So, and, yeah, he came in and did, bass guitar when, so it was Quentin on guitar and Casey playing bass, me drumming and Scott front. And, then when Quentin left, Casey moved over and filled the guitar spot. And we got Jim Walter from Fighter.
Yeah.
And he played bass. Him and Amy both came out on the road with us.
Yeah. And Amy's been on the podcast too. So
she's awesome. I love them both.
I didn't realize when I talked to her that her husband, you know, had played with White Cross for a time period. I learned that later with Casey, but
yeah.
Was it unusual for you to see such, I guess, a bit of rotation of musicians in this what is perceived as a very popular Christian rock band?
Yeah, you know, for me, yeah, it was. I was. Beyond thrilled just to be where I was for one point, seeing all those members change in and out, I started feeling like, hey, I've been here the longest. You know, I've been here since 96 and all through 97, all through 98, you know, and it was a pretty solid thing. And I was like, well, it was just me and Scott and all these members are going in and out, just me and Scott. So it felt kind of cool, but, you know, I just did what I was supposed to do, which was, you know, I was a drummer of the band and I was very blessed to play and write all of my parts that you hear on the Flytrap album. That all came from my brain, you know, from the music they put together. We all sat together and jammed out, and that's what came out. So, and then playing this old stuff, which was killer. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at a set list that's laminated that I pulled out. I was going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
We I don't know where the heck or what year or anything, but it started out with The Balance, which is I believe is off of Equilibrium, went into Salt City, into Fallen Star, which is off of Equilibrium, I believe. Goodbye Cruel World is off of Equilibrium. Right Before Your Eyes, into Amazing Love, which was off of Flytrap, then a drum solo, then Refuse to Lose, which is off of Flytrap, Into the Line off of Flytrap. Then a guitar solo, and then In the Kingdom, Say a Prayer is off Flytrap, into King of Angels, and then the encore was Because of Jesus. So,
see, yeah, you guys were really hammering the newer stuff for the from that album and the previous one then.
Yeah, we were pushing the album is what we were doing.
I wonder if that would have been, I mean, I wonder, in my opinion, I think if I would have seen White Cross at that time, I would have been a little disappointed maybe. True. You're not getting as many classics from
right.
The, you know, but I mean, I understand it. Trying to push album sales too, you know, trying to get people to like these songs, but.
You know, we shoved stuff in and out, of course. I mean, you know, we did Good Enough. We did, oh, what's that song? You Know What's Right, or whatever that's
right.
Song.
Yeah.
We saw it, you know, so we'd throw stuff in and out, but yeah, we were really heavy on the newer stuff. That's, you know.
What was your favorite? What was your favorite old school White Cross song to play live?
Old school, man. I love, you know, I kind of like the, a lot of stuff sounded Van Halen-ish to me, but I like Dancing in Heaven a lot. That was pretty mm-hmm. cool. And of course, like I said, being animated, I could really lay into Because of Jesus, because I mean, it's just a four on the floor, man. I could just pick that stick, clear up over my head and bash that snare. It was cool.
I would think those songs are a lot of fun. Very good, catchy yeah. songs and some good drum stuff in there. But
Good Enough.
I guess people, listeners, for you know, that listen to the show, if they've listened to my episode with Scott or even with Rex or Michael, they might wonder, you know, how was it working with Scott? I know both Scott and Rex have clearly stated and made it known that they don't get along. They don't really care for each other. It's more business. I know. Well, then I've had other guys that were on White Cross and just the vibe that I got, that it was personality differences dealing with Scott with being with him. But what was your take? Being, yeah. You know, what you want to be open with. I'm not looking for dirt or anything, but, you know, how was your relationship with Scott?
You know, Scott has a heart of gold. I love him with all my heart. And the first thing for Scott was not the music. He has music all in him and he loves it, but his first was ministry. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
And he used music as a platform. He let God use that. For a platform, which was, you can't take that from him. That's amazing. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And I think, only from my personal opinion, because I cannot speak for Scott. I'm not him and I'm not in his heart or his brain. But from my heart and my brain, I feel that Scott may have been had some deep hurt inside about the whole industry changing and doing stuff that he didn't really enjoy. He was more into the classic, you know, the rat sounding stuff. And that's where he thrived. He loved that. And we had to change to keep up with the industry, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Even have a label, you know, so you wouldn't get dumped. That, you know, the label wants to make some kind of money. That's what it's about. It's a business. And I think because of him being going through all that and the lineup changes, I think he was hurt inside sometimes by that. And so like a dad on a trip and the kids won't shut up and they keep yelling, you know, the dad loves him with all of his heart, but he gets frustrated. And so I think, from my heart, my perspective, that's where maybe the tension came with Scott, with some of us in the band. And I had some as well. But I think it's more not that he was some kind of person that you couldn't get along with and that he was just some mean person. I think it was more he was trying to hold on to what was big at one time, huge, and it was slipping yeah. away. And that's got to hurt. So,
yeah.
And so because of that, you get irritable and, you know, and you're on the road too, and you're tired and you're out there singing. And I mean, we're not doing shabby shows. We're doing, you know, 140,000 people stadiums, you know, in Sao Paulo. And, There's videos of that stuff. I put a couple of videos up on my YouTube that I just gave out. You can go and you can see some of the crowds and stuff. And it,
yeah, overseas, I'll check that out.
Overseas was great. States, not so well.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've heard that. I've also heard just how the crowds or the perception of how things were accepted or not accepted from European crowds as opposed to American, you know, or not just crowds, but just people in particular. But I've heard a lot of people with lots of positive experiences playing in Europe. You know, then there's some off the wall weird stuff, but of course, you know, those South America shows are real legendary for a lot of Christian bands like White Cross. I know White Cross is huge down there. Guardian, Bride, and seeing those shows, man, that was there a show that stands out to you?
Of course, SOS Festival in Sao Paulo. That's the big one. We toured a lot when we did that stuff. It always was White Cross, Guardian, Bride, always. And we toured with those guys extensively over there. And of course, the festivals had many, many bands and a lot of Brazilian bands as well. But you know, we got fit in that. Even we would go to Germany and do what they called, I don't know if they call it like Christmas rock night or something like that, but Guardian was there, we were there, and a band called Narnia. And
oh yeah, I like MXPX. Narnia. They're a great band.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was neat. I really hold lots of fond memories, and I keep in contact with many people as I can. Me and Troy from Bride, we talk online on Facebook and stuff, and like each other's videos, and you know, just whatever. Talked to Dale a couple times, not much, but Quentin, well, Quentin, I do, Brent, I do, Casey and I, we always joke around with each other.
You weren't in there. Rex wasn't part of the band at all during your time period. Was that correct? Yeah.
No, he wasn't. And
would you have liked to worked with Rex?
Yeah.
And Scott at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. I would have loved it. I contacted and talked with Rex years ago, because he's not far from me. He's only 2.5-3 hours from me right now,
right?
And he was doing like his blues project or whatever. But
yeah, and you're talking about Scott, and I hate that the situation is what it is, because right. Scott and Rex really did create really good music, in my opinion, together. And it's unfortunately that, you know, the things are going on now that the relationship, they just don't want to. Well, I know Scott would work with Rex. He wants to, but Rex doesn't want to. You know, he even said that. But and I know Scott's hurt, and I know that hurts Scott. And I hate that Scott. I'm sure he says he would do something, but I don't think he's going to do anything unless it's without Rex, in my honest opinion, from what I've gathered from my talks and knowing him and people.
I messaged Scotty not too long ago. And I had just put the bug in his ear, and I said, you know, there's a lot of, not that I agree with a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of twofers out there, you know, two different Queensrÿches, two different rats, two different, you know,
true,
you know, and, just kind of tickling the ears, but I didn't really get anything out of that. So.
Yeah. But, see what happens. You know, it's White Cross is going on.
Yes.
With a different singer. I mean, it sounds good, but, you know, a lot of people, when I got on, he was matter of fact with everything. He cleared up any rumors, because people keep saying, oh, it's his health, it's this, that. And he cleared up. It just, what, you know, what's, if anybody wants to list that, does not listen to Scott episode, they need to. He's very blunt. He's very open. It's
a clash of character, of personalities.
Yeah. So going back to you, what did lead you out of White Cross?
Well, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. The in 99, I did another album with them. I don't know if you know that. I did Flytrap. I did an album called One More Encore.
Okay. And
it was a compilation album, but we redid No Second Chances and made it really not like No Second Chances, but that is me playing on that record. And so that's a fresh cut with me playing drums and Brent playing bass, and Quentin playing guitar. And we redid that New Second Chances. And like I said, those of you who love No Second Chances, it is nothing like it. It's so alternative. So, but that's us actually recorded and played that. And then we put Flytrap stuff on there and some other stuff from other albums. But it was called One More Encore. That's the last one that was made after Flytrap that I was on.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
What's that?
I didn't realize that. I was looking it up as you were discussing. It's funny that Flytrap is not on Apple iTunes, at least not streaming. But the One More Encore is on there. If people are like me and stream most of your music and want to listen to it. I'm like, you're saying that. I'm sitting here going, I want to listen to it right now. I'm going to, as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to check it out. Because I want to hear it. I'm intrigued by that. So,
well, it's neat because, I mean, everybody, like yourself included, you want to hear you on the radio. You want to hear you on an album that you go to the store and pick up. And that's what was so cool about being able to record on those. And, you know, I told my sons, hey, this is Daddy. This is me. You know, and so it was really cool. But
so was it your reason you weren't wanting to leave the band? Something else.
Scott calls and says that we're not going to go out and do any touring or anything or any new music. Him and his family were moving to Sachem, Paraguay, and they were going to be missionaries. This is around 2000, I believe, or 99, 2000, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so they moved to South America, him and his family. I don't remember how long they were there, but they were there and they were doing missionary stuff. And so, of course, you know, we're all on hiatus, and I'm playing with a group that's doing college circuit tours or something, you know, called Kung Pao. We're doing 80s stuff. We had a female singer doing, you know, Girls Want to Have Fun and all that stuff. And it's a show band, basically. And so I'm playing all that stuff. And then he just never, when they decided to get White Cross back together, is when they got actual White Cross back together.
Right. Rex is coming back.
Michael.
Michael. Did anybody even contact you and say, hey, we're. Oh. How did that make you feel? Were you kind of hurt by that decision, or did you understand
the decision? I understand them getting back as White Cross, because that's what they were, but I would have loved to have had a call.
Yeah.
Loved to have had a call and say, hey, look, you know, we're just getting the original lineup back together and I'm going to record this and the fan. And I would have, that would have been, you know, I wasn't angry whatsoever. I just thought, well, I guess that's over. I'm done. That chapter of my life is done.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would have loved to heard it or somebody say something, but that didn't happen. But it's okay. It's you know, they got together and that's the original lineup, or other than the bass player. I don't know if the bass player.
Yeah. Well, I know Michael's not original, but he was a well-known player for quite a while.
Right. In the Star Song years and stuff.
So. Yeah. So I do want to hit on, you know, before we close up, about you have your own music where you're singing lead. Is that all original music? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I write continuously. I write all the time. But I've got a few CDs. One of them, and it's just regular, it's just secular music. It's all positive, uplifting music. There's a couple tongue in cheek where I've been hurt by a divorce that's happened, but
right.
Nothing horrible. It's just, you know, it's it's not an uplifting one. It's just kind of,
yeah, you're being real. It's okay to think about that. It's okay.
But anyways, yeah, it's called Someday. The CD is called Someday.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, it was on all the streaming devices. It's not anymore. You can probably hear a lot of my original stuff off of a platform called Reverb Nation.
Okay.
You've heard of that. Like Reverb on a guitar. ReverbNation.com. And then just look up Troy Stone. And you'll see, I got a whole playlist of all kinds of stuff on there, of my stuff that I write. I play guitar, so I wrote all the music. I write all the lyrics. I write all the melodies, and I drum. And I don't play the guitars. Mm. I just write on the guitar, and then I let a real guitar player play it.
I understand.
You know, I can't do solos, and I can't do probably the correct chords on there, but I can write a song like "Ooh." Nobody's business. But
has there ever been any other opportunities to play drums with any, well-known bands or anything like that ever come up?
A long time ago, before White Cross, I thought I was going to be in the group Red Sea.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Red Sea?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. With Chris Sorensen, yeah. Chris, oh, man. And didn't P.K. Mitchell produce that album, the Red Sea album?
I don't know the logistics of all that.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, tell me about that. What? How were you almost in that band?
Chris and I were friends through Sanctuary with Bob Beeman there, and we were hanging out. And so I went to Chris's house several times and learned all the material for the Red Sea project. And they were looking for drummers to put together the whole project to go out and tour. And so I learned the music. And when I learned the stuff right. And so I had the whole album and the BGVs all learned everything.
I got you.
Chris was like, yeah, man, this is going to be killer. So we got into a place where they were auditioning drummers. And Robin was there singing, and,
mm-hmm.
and Chris. And I don't remember who was playing bass, but... Sorry, bass player. I'm sorry. But anyway, we played the stuff and it went well. But then another guy came in after me, and it was more of an image thing, I believe. They wanted to look like the they sounded a lot like they had Badlands players on the album, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they wanted that kind of that rough boy look, and I had the bleach blonde hair, and I just didn't look the part as what I feel in my heart. And then they never went out anyways. Robin never went out with it. So
well, yeah, that's still an interesting story. I mean, I'm glad you told that. So I'm a fan of they only put out the one album, I believe, correct? Red Sea, the first only one.
Right. It was great stuff. I love playing that stuff. I wish I could have went out with them.
Yeah, well, I would like to see them do something else. You know, all these bands coming back and putting out new material and stuff. I know Chris with Fear Not, but I had Robin on the show, and he's he's come back out with the new album, and I don't know if he'll do anything else anytime soon. I hope he does.
Hey, listen, Chris or Robin, if you want to do something, give me a call. I mean, I'm busy right now, but I might make some room.
So. I might have to fight you first because they can have me too if they want a drummer. No, but
I'm just, there you go. I lost out to Joe Walt.
Oh, man. First time anybody said that. But anything else that we haven't gone over that you like to add to the podcast? Anything I failed to mention?
Man, I am hugely active playing music still. I play nonstop. Throughout the week, I have a thing that I have created called the Troy Stone Healthcare Shows. I go in, I do assisted living facilities and nursing homes, and I'll sing to those folks, 50s and 60s and love songs and all kinds of things. It just brings the joy out of them and blesses me. I do that Monday through Thursday, and then Friday, Saturdays, and some Sundays. I play with a hair band called Big Guns.
Oh, cool.
You can find that on Facebook at Big Guns 1989.
Okay.
And look that up, and there's lots of videos on there. You can see me playing as soon as last weekend, you can see.
So, check that out.
So, yeah, Big Guns 1989. I do that. Then I'm hugely on social media. I'm a big junkie with that. If you want to friend me, if you want to find out anything, at Facebook, I'm at Troy Stone Live. My like page on Facebook is Troy Stone Music. You got Troy Stone Live, Troy Stone Music, Reverb Nation. We already covered that. ReverbNation.com, Troy Stone, YouTube's Troy's Madness. And on TikTok and Instagram is at Troy Stone Drumming. Well, there you go.
I'll try to get those links in the show notes too. So awesome. If anyone wants to check it out, they can just easily go to that. Troy, man, I appreciate you coming on, and always let my guest have the last word. If there's anything you want to say to the listeners or anybody that is familiar with your time with White Cross, or anybody that just is listening, you don't want to say anything, just now's your time. I'll let you have the last word.
Perfect. Joel, first off, thank you for having me. It's an honor. It's a blessing. And most importantly, I tell everyone a couple things. I have a passion for entertaining, a passion for music, but a love for people. And that combination makes my whole world so blessed. And for anyone that has actually got to meet me or seen anything I've done, I thank you for coming out. And I know it wasn't just for me, but I thank you for listening to that. And I hope that we become friends and stay friends throughout this life. Remember that everyone is given a gift. Don't take it lightly. Use your gifts. Use it to glorify good and God. And be positive in this world. There's too much negativity, too much people dragging people down. And we need to be the light. That's what we're called to do. So put your arms around someone. Show the love. And I hope to meet each and every one of you sometime, somewhere down the road, someplace. I love you with all my heart, and have a wonderful week.
Just one more chance, I'll follow the light. me one more chance, but there's no second chance. No, no second chance. Give me one more chance to do things right. Just one more chance, I'll follow the light. But there's no second chances. No one's to hear me cry. No second chances. You listen to lies. One more chance to do things right. Just one more chance, I'll follow the light. But there's no second chances. No one's to hear me cry. No second chances. You listen to lies. One more chance to do things right. Just no second chances.